You are Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast on the Houston Rockets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Survive and advance. That's essentially what the Rockets did on Sunday evening at Toyota Center. 104-97 win over the undermanned Dallas Mavericks. On that note, welcome into a new episode of Locked On Rockets, your home for daily and post-game commentary on the Houston Rockets. I'm your host, Ben Dubose. This certainly was not one of the prettiest wins of the season for the Rockets against a Mavs team without Dirk Nowitzki, J.J. Barea, and Wes Matthews, all due to either injury or rest on the second night of a back-to-back, but the Rockets did find a way to get it done. It's their 8th consecutive win and 12th in 13 games since the return of James Harden. Rockets improving to 42-13 on the year. Mavs falling to 18-39. Now, in our 3 points recap, we're going to do a couple of segments about the game. In the final segment of the show, we're still in the aftermath of the Rockets' new wave of players with the additions should be formalized either tomorrow or Tuesday. Brandon Wright, veteran center, most recently the Memphis Grizzlies. And then Joe Johnson, 7-time All-Star, most recently of the Utah Jazz, now 36 years old in his 17th NBA season. Both are going to be coming to the Rockets, as we've discussed in our shows this weekend. And in our third segment of today's show, I'm going to be joined by Dave Hardesty, editor of Clutch Fans, to talk about what those two players are likely to bring to the Rockets, as well as a few other items, most notably the decision by Mike D'Antoni to stick with P.J. Tucker in the starting lineup tonight in place of Ryan Anderson for a second consecutive game. In terms of the first couple of segments of the show, I want to discuss what went wrong, because when you look at it on paper, the Rockets against a Mavs team without three key players, you wouldn't think it would be necessarily this close, although the final score is a little bit misleading. The Mavs went on a run in garbage time to get it back to single digits. But in the second segment, we'll also discuss what the Rockets did to fix it, because certainly when you have Chris Paul leading the way, 25 points, 9 assists, 8 rebounds, James Harden with 27, Clint Capella another double-double with 16-11. Let's not make it seem like everything went poorly. The reason that I think a lot of Rockets fans are kind of about this win is because of the incredibly lofty standard to which they have set of late. And I would say the primary culprit, even though the Mavs were held below 100 points for the game, was the defense, because the Mavs, not a great offensive team to begin with. And without three players, you would like to think this is a night that the Rockets could crank it up defensively. And ultimately, I suppose they did. When it really mattered, they were able to, the Rockets went on an 11-4 run to close the third quarter. They held the Mavs to just 20 points in the third quarter, 22 in the fourth, so just 42 points in the second half for Dallas. And of those 42 points, 8 of them came on a completely inconsequential 8-0 run to end the game to get it to that 104-97 final margin when the Rockets had essentially called the dogs off. The Rockets were up 104-89 with 2:20 to go, and the Mavs cut into the margin, making it seem a lot closer than it actually was. So in terms of the defense in the second half, yes, it was a lot better, which you would expect the Rockets to do against an undermanned Dallas team. In the first half, it was sort of interesting. The Rockets in the first quarter on defense were fine. They 27-19. The only reason that was even as close as it was, 27-19, is the Rockets were just 2 of 9 from behind the arc. Defensively, the effort was fine. We had a couple of quality plays from the likes of James Harden, Eric Gordon. And then in the second quarter is where it got away from them. 36 points from the Mavs, so many right at the rim. It seemed like Dwight Powell, of all guys, had a monster night. 18 points, 12 rebounds, 5 of them on offense, 6 of 12 from the field, and that's what allowed the Mavs to be within 2 getting into the half, 57-55, and close until the Rockets, led by Chris Paul, went on a burst at the end of the third quarter, which is what great teams do. They tend to own the end of quarters. The Rockets did that tonight, and they're able to grind out wins against teams that they're just, well, more talented and also more mature than, which the Rockets definitely were than a Mavs team tonight, led by the likes of Harrison Barnes, Dwight Powell, Yogi Ferrell, Dennis Smith, who, again, 16-11, Dennis Smith is an impressive rookie. There's more talent there than you might think at first glance, looking at an 18 and now 39 Mavs team with tonight's loss. But the second quarter defense, I thought that was the big story, and with the Rockets, the issue There were a couple of things. The rim protection was not ideal. Nene tonight, 17 minutes. He did make all three of his shots. I thought he was a little flat-footed. Then Clint Capella, again, even though he had 16 and 11 and three blocks, coming off a game Friday in which he had a career night, 23 points, a career high, 25 rebounds. Maybe there's some tired legs going into that. Also, in general, I think heading into the All-Star break, this is a week a lot of times around the NBA, you have players who are looking ahead, especially a game like this against a Mavs team that is not especially good. You think you'll be able to show up immediately and take care of business. And to some extent, the Rockets, I think in the first quarter, the defense was good enough that, well, towards the end of the quarter, when they got a couple of threes from Gerald Green, who ended up 4 of 9 from behind the arc tonight, 12 points, they realized, well, our defense is there. Now the threes are starting to fall that they think they're going to pull away. And then ultimately, it did happen. It took until late in the third and fourth quarters for that to really be the case. The bigger factor, like I said, I think the rim protection was a little lacking. Maybe this was a game where you could have used the springs of Brandon Wright, one of your newcomers. But also, I think the minutes piled up lately by Luke Bamute and PJ Tucker in the absence of Trevor Ariza, I think that caught up with them. Now, Trevor, grade one hamstring strain, but he's 32 years old, also this close to the All-Star break. If you hold him out until the break, that gives you 9 extra days, essentially, because the Rockets don't play from this Friday, from this Wednesday until next Friday. So I think if you're that close to the break anyway, and especially if you have reinforcements with the likes of not just Brandon Wright at the center spot, but Joe Johnson as far as your three and especially four options on offense, then maybe that buys you a couple of extra days to be very careful with a 32-year-old Trevor Ariza. But Luke and PJ, you think back, they have played so many key minutes in this stretch. Now, everybody got to take it a little bit easy in Friday night's blowout win over the Nuggets. But boy, you look back to that game last Wednesday in Miami, which I said at the time was one of the more gutty ones of the year when you factor the brutal back-to-back from Brooklyn to Miami, getting into the hotel at 4 a.m., all those sorts of things. Luke played 37 minutes. PJ played 41. And PJ also has had to kind of play minutes. Ryan Anderson missed a game in there with the ankle sprain, really a game and a half. And, of course, PJ has ascended to the starting lineup in the absence of Ryan. And now it seems like maybe they're considering sticking with that for a little while. Mike D'Antoni's not committal to anything at this point, says it's all experiment. They don't want to get the players too cut up and who's starting and who's not. They just want everybody to play. We'll have more on that decision with Dave Hardesty in the final segment of this show. But I do think you've had to rely a lot on Luke and PJ, and to some extent they've mitigated the absence of Trevor, who's a starter and a guy that for years now the Rockets have counted on to give you 30 to 35 minutes per night. But Trevor's been out a couple of weeks now, and this is the point that maybe you're starting to feel some of those guys that have really stepped it up in Trevor's absence starting to get a little bit overextended. The combination of that, lethargic rim protection, maybe looking ahead to the All-Star break, also looking ahead Tuesday to Minnesota, which is going to be a tougher team, especially on the interior, led by the likes of Karl Anthony Towns, Taj Gibson, and I think it was sort of the perfect storm tonight. Now, I'm not going to say it's ideal. I'm not going to say it's acceptable. What I will say is the Rockets did turn it around, really, in the second half, for the first 23 minutes of it, until that 8-0 run in garbage time, the Rockets held the Mavs to just 34 points, so they did turn it around when it mattered. It's not like James Harden got going from a shooting perspective, 27 points, but did so on just 6 of 19 from the field. That seems a little misleading, because he did get fouled on some of the shots, was not getting the whistles, but regardless, 6 of 19 is what it is. Ryan Anderson off the bench, 1 of 5. He had gotten going from a shooting perspective late. That ground to a halt tonight. It was not a banner night for the Rockets offensively. 43% from the field, under 29% from behind the arc. So they had to lean on the defense, even though it let them down for a while. Ultimately, it came through. That's part of why I'm not that worried about it. The other reason, folks, it's one game. You have to be able to see the forest for the trees. And just as I told you that night in New Orleans, the only game they've lost in the 13 since James Harden's return, they had been so good on defense before then. It's kind of natural once in a while, especially in a sport where you have 82 regular season games, you're going to have a blip where you're not quite yourself. The same could be said of that Brooklyn game at the beginning of last week, and then they turned it up second night of a back-to-back in Miami with one of their finest efforts of the year, especially when you consider the headwinds of the Anderson and Gordon injuries, also Ariza, the brutal schedule getting in at 4 a.m. So, folks, I'm not going to worry about any trend, especially when we're talking about one game, especially when the Rockets, as we said, over the first 23 minutes of the second half, held the Mavs to just 23 or 34 points, excuse me, not 23, that would have been a record, but 34 in 23 minutes, nonetheless, still very, very good. The other thing, I'm not necessarily convinced that the Mavericks playing without Dirk, Matthews, and Brea is necessarily the worst thing in a one-game scenario, especially against a Rockets team that's so good, now 42-13. Maybe the Rockets look past them, that might be a slight factor, but I think more than that, the Mavs being on the second night of a back-to-back on the road, I think by doing what they did, A, they became less predictable. They came into the game as one of the, I believe, the worst offensive rebounding team in the league. Maybe it's the second worst, but the point is they're not very good. Ended up with 12 tonight, had 52 rebounds as a team, out-rebounded the Rockets by 10. And of course, that speaks to their effort. Well, it's not just that the Rockets didn't rebound well. Part of it is that the statistics that say the Mavs are such a poor rebounding team, to a large extent, you can throw those out the book when maybe the three of the guys that they lean on most, Dirk, Matthews, and Barea, none of them are out there. So, again, it was tougher for the Rockets to scout. It was tougher to prepare for because it's a unique team. And in a back-to-back setting, in which typically they might be a little tired, the Mavs actually had fresher legs. Credit to Rick Carlisle, one of the best X's and O's tacticians in the NBA. His team may be undermanned, but from an X's and O's perspective, he's as good as it gets. Give the Mavs some credit as well. The defense in the first half was a problem. Ultimately, though, the Rockets found a way to grind it out. There was never that stretch in which they gave Dallas a haymaker, but it was enough that the Rockets got the win and kept this stretch going. Now 8 wins in a row and 12 of their past 13 since the return of James Harden. Now, I've spent most of the first 10 minutes of the program talking about what went wrong. And when I say what went wrong, I mean relatively, because, folks, the Rockets have won 8 in a row, 12 of 13. They're 42-13. This is a fabulous basketball team. This is just one of those 1-82 nights right before the All-Star break. Folks, I get it. This is nothing to be overly concerned about. I just feel obligated to discuss what went on in those lethargic points when you factor in a Rockets team that really hadn't even played a competitive game in a while. Look at what happened Friday when they beat a likely playoff-bound Denver team by 26 and led by 30-plus for large portions of the game. What went right tonight, in my opinion, besides getting better defensively, Chris Paul. Boy, what's amazing to me about it, 25 points, 9 assists, 8 rebounds, 0 of 4 was his start from the field, and yet he finished 9 of 15, made 9 of his last 11 shots, and he was 2 of 7 from 3, which tells you that he was 7 of 8 from inside the arc. So when the 3 wasn't falling, okay, then he got it going towards the rim. In the mid-range game, went to the line 6 times, made 5 of those. He felt early on maybe it wasn't his night from 3, and he found other ways to get involved. Also had 3 steals. Quite simply, this was a game in which Chris Paul made it known, and I've said this on Twitter a lot, at Ben Dubose, Chris Paul has no interest in losing this basketball game. And the key stretch that really defined it was the end of the third quarter. Mavs were within 5 with about 3 minutes left, and in the final, 2.5 minutes, the Rockets went on an 11-4 run. That pushed it to 12 points after the third quarter, and realistically, from then on out, it was never a contest. The Mavs only cut it to single digits, as we said, in the final 2 minutes when it was just garbage time and there was no real reason for the Rockets to be going all out at that point in the game. But as I said, that 11-4 run that closed the third, that was essentially the defining stretch of the game. That was when the Rockets finally got separation from a pesky Dallas team. All 11 points either scored or assisted on by Chris Paul. That included 2 assists on 3s to Eric Gordon. Not a good night for Eric at all. 24 points, 2 of 11 from the field. But the 2 he made were very big, came at a key point. Almost felt like Chris was trying to get Eric going. Thankfully, he did. And again, that was the stretch where the Rockets got separation. Also, it was reminiscent of where they were at earlier this year when they were at their best. Now, there have been so many injuries lately that the Rockets have had to lean a lot on James Harden, and that's great because he's the MVP frontrunner. He's a hell of a player, but sometimes it may not be fair to lean that much on James. And once in a while, even James Harden is going to have a bad night. 6 of 19, as I said. Some of those, I thought he got fouled, and they let the officials, for whatever reason, let this game be a little too physical. But whatever reason, 6 of 19 is 6 of 19. And what the beauty of the Rockets was when they were at their best, fully healthy, the stretch when they went 14 in a row and 20 of 21, we can see if they can keep this current stretch, now 8 in a row, 12 of 13, to get to that point. But back then, I'm sure a lot of you guys remember, sometimes the best stretches of the game came with James Harden on the sideline. It was that second unit with Chris Paul, Eric Gordon attacking against second units for the opposition that were not prepared to handle the juice and the intelligence that guys like Chris Paul and Eric Gordon have relative to the usual backcourts that are playing late in the third quarter and early in the fourth quarter, which are usually just run-of-the-mill backups. In Chris Paul's 35 minutes tonight, plus 22 was his plus-minus. Folks, sometimes that can be misleading in an individual game. It was not tonight. Everyone else on the Rockets, after Chris with plus 22, second was Luke at plus 7. Then you had James at plus 5. You had a lot of plus 4, plus 5s on the bench. You had a couple of minuses. Gerald Green at minus 6. Markel Brown at minus 6. He just played the last minute of the game when Farrell hit a couple of inconsequential threes. But the point is, for the Rockets, there were not a lot of true difference makers. But they had one. And that one was Chris Paul, and against a Mavs team that did not have a lot in the way of a veteran presence, that was enough for the Rockets tonight. Even though James Harden led them in scoring with 27, this was Chris Paul's game. And if you had any concerns at all about his showing on Friday, again, the Rockets won by 26, so it's kind of silly to have concerns, but Chris Paul did play just 22 minutes, 11 points, 3 of 8 from the field, not exactly a banner evening, 7 assists, but again, it wasn't necessary. Folks, this should tell you that, yes, this is still Chris Paul, top 10 player in the league. And what makes the Rockets so legit as a threat this year is that even when James Harden is not at his best, they still have ways to win games. That's what's different about this Rockets team. Certainly the depth is there, the defense is better, all that sorts of stuff. But above all else, what makes this year's Rockets different from last year's is that there is a second guy that you can count on to be there at an elite level when you need it. It's not just about James Harden. Chris Paul is there as well, and even in a game that otherwise would have been forgettable, and maybe on the balance of the season it still was, the Rockets have had much more aesthetically pleasing wins than Sunday nights over Dallas. At the end of the day, it was a good reminder of just how valuable Chris Paul is and will be to this team down the stretch of the season. Now, to wrap up the show, in the coming minutes, I'm going to have a conversation, actually taped a couple hours ago, with Dave Hardesty, owner and editor of Clutch Fans. That's the godfather of all, not just Rockets fan sites, but sports fan sites. Been around since the late 90s, as good as it gets for Rockets coverage. Also message boards, forums, it's just a wonderful community there that I've been a part of for almost 20 years now. Dave is a great guy, and so I'm always thrilled when I can get a hold of him. Best time to get a segment tonight was before the game, and so I wanted to pick his brain because Dave is a big picture thinker, and when I think, you know, what are we learning about the Rockets, not just one game to the next, but one year to the next, one generation to the next, Dave Hardesty is the guy whose brain I want to pick because he really cares about these guys. He understands trends in a way that few do in this Rockets fan community. So tonight, best time to get a hold of him was before the game, during our media duties. The one downside to that, I will apologize, because we taped this at Toyota Center. The upside, we did it in person, so I think the audio quality is pretty good in terms of us back and forth. It's not like a phone conversation. Also, the free-flowing nature of it. It's always easier when you can look at someone in the eye rather than guessing on the phone when to interject, when they're going to finish, yada, yada. One downside to this, well, because it's taped at Toyota Center, there's a game that everybody's getting ready for, so no matter where you tape, there's going to be somebody walking by, setting up. If you're actually outside in the arena, there's going to be music in the background, so you sort of had to pick your poison. So what we did, we taped it in the bowels of Toyota Center, but you will hear a few, bells and whistles in the background, a few clangings here and there. That's folks getting ready for the Rockets games. My apologies for that. This was just the only time that it would really work. Other than that, though, I think it's a really good conversation, and hopefully the distractions are fairly minimal. Again, we're going to be joined in just a few moments by Dave Hardesty, owner of Clutch Fans, and he will wrap this thing up talking about the additions and also where the Rockets go from here as they head towards the All-Star break. And, well, we'll see if the starting lineup stays the same. As we mentioned tonight, P.J. Tucker getting the start in place of Ryan Anderson for a second consecutive game. But for now, this will do it for the true game recap portion of the podcast. Again, the segment with Dave, we taped it before the game because not so much talking about the Mavs because, folks, this is a classic 1-82 game. You're not going to take that much from it either way. This is not like playing the Warriors or Cavaliers or Spurs, anything like that. But, because of that, I think we can wrap up this game recap right here. And from this point forward, stay tuned for Dave Hardesty, owner of Clutch Fans, as we discuss what new additions Joe Johnson and Brandon Wright are likely to bring to the Rockets in the days, weeks, and even months ahead. All right, here at Toyota Center with Dave Hardesty, owner of Clutch Fans.
Full disclosure, we're taping this segment before tonight's Rockets-Dallas game, so if something happens to ridiculously change the outlook, then, yeah, it's our fault for doing this before. But, Dave, first things first, welcome back to the show.
All right, thanks for having me.
Yeah, main thing we want to talk about, less about the game and more about the stuff that's been going on off the court the last couple of days, additions of Joe Johnson and Brandon Wright, which sounds like they'll both be finalized tomorrow because I think the buyouts are agreed to, and there's just that 48-hour waiver period, right?
Right.
So I think 4 p.m. Monday. So before we get into each individual player, it feels like to me, I know you're a big picture guy just like I am, this is the buyout that in the last two or three years always went to Cleveland or San Antonio, because you typically don't see all the way front runners to where you'll see buyouts joining Golden State. They want to be with the challenger, but it felt like the Rockets before this year were not really that peak challenger. Whereas now, does it feel like that maybe the Rockets have jumped the field to where they are now that it destination?
Yeah, that's a great point, because I think right off the bat, the first two big buyouts, really, you know, other than Greg Monroe, if you will, you know, that was a different situation as far as money.
Yep.
Boom, the Rockets land both of them right out of the gate. And I think, you know, obviously Brandon Wright and Joe Johnson have been thinking about the Rockets for a while, because both of those guys knew there was a buyout looming if they made it through the trade deadline. And so, that's a great takeaway. I think the Rockets are now an it destination. It's what Daryl Morey's always wanted. He's always wanted to be top heavy with stars, knowing that he could always fill out the rotation with guys like this.
Yeah, and I would say, honestly, even though they're pretty much done now, because I don't think they can make any more additions without going into the tax territory, which is something they don't want to do. Also, right now, it's ridiculous how deep their 12-man active roster is with the original nine plus Gerald, Joe, and Brandon. So they're probably done, but I would think, beyond just the short term, I mean, this shows that barring something extraordinary happening this postseason in a disappointing fashion, they're probably well positioned to be an it team this summer as well, cough LeBron James.
Yeah, it's exactly true. That's, I think, one of the reasons, not the entire reason, but one of the reasons they didn't do anything at the trade deadline is because they weren't willing to be a team that's going to take on extra salary. They were looking to move salary. And I think that that's definitely the case. They're not going to sacrifice the now. They want to win this season, but at the same time, they want to position themselves to be a team that, so, you know, like you said, LeBron James, if he wants to come here to Houston, they will find out a way to make it happen. Ryan Anderson will get moved somehow, even if it costs multiple picks, and they'll do something to try to make that happen.
Yeah, and that's something, that's a point that I've made over the last couple of days, which is that folks wondering, well, can they move Ryan Anderson? I've seen some takeaways here locally of folks saying, well, is it a bad sign they couldn't move him? Well, no, they didn't need to move him now. You don't need to move him until June. And last year, it's not that they couldn't move him. It's just Carmelo Anthony was not worth moving two first-round picks for, whereas LeBron James is. So if push comes to shove, even if you got to attach multiple first-rounders, you can get him out. And it's a fact of, you know, it's 2 years, $40 million, as opposed to 3 years, $60 million like last summer. So there's reason for optimism. Turning to the actual candidates, the guys that they acquired and they're bringing in, Joe Johnson, we'll start with him. I had a conversation yesterday with David Locke, who's the play-by-play voice for the Utah Jazz, has covered Joe, and there were a couple of things that he said that stood out to me. One, he pointed out his split, saying whether he's on 0, 1, or 2 days of rest, Joe, there was a big split, and basically that he performs much better when he's rested, which kind of reminds you of the Nene template and how they found so much success. And the other thing, to extend that analogy, we all remember Nene in the playoffs last year, especially the Oklahoma City series, how valuable he was. Similar thing happened with Joe in the playoffs, where he had the buzzer beater against the Clippers, also played extremely well in that series, I think 16-4-3. So it feels like to me, I don't know how much he plays in the regular season, but to me, it strikes me as a buy low playoff signing. Is that a fair characterization?
Oh, I think that's a great characterization. I think, you know, there was a lot of, I don't say a lot, but, you know, some people were saying, why are we going after this guy? We have Gerald Green. You can't sacrifice this guy's time. You can't sacrifice this other guy's time. And none of that really matters. I mean, I think the Rockets are just trying to, add as much talent. We don't know what's going to happen with injuries. And I think, as you pointed out, it's a great template with Joe Johnson. If you're going to, you know, rest him on back-to-backs or play him, you know, here and there.
Yeah, and in the playoffs, you have no back-to-backs. So.
Exactly. That's another great point as well. So I think they're going to get good value out of him. I think he's, he's got experience with D'Antoni. He's experienced in general, and he's a great teammate from everything that we've heard. He's skilled. I think people looked at this season and they think he's washed. I don't think that's the case at all. I think, you know, he had a wrist injury start out the year, and he's kind of come along later in the second half of this first half of the season, if you will. I think he's going to be fine. I think he's going to be a great fit for the Rockets. He may not be a guy who gets you tons of minutes early on, but he's going to be a guy that D'Antoni can turn to in a pinch.
Yeah, and I looked up the stats. It was staggering how much he had improved since the slow start to the year. You know, folks see just the 27% three-point percentage and wonder, oh, is he washed? But no, the first 11 games, he shot just 7%, and that was sandwiched around when he missed 6 weeks with an injury to his shooting wrist. That's obviously going to affect him. The last 21, he's been shooting 36% from behind the arc, which is pretty much in line with his career averages. The other thing that David said that kind of caught my eye, he mentioned the potential. He said at this point in his career, he's a small ball four. You know, people expecting him to be a, you know, potential point guard relief valve. I think those are kind of thinking of Joe Johnson from 10 years ago when he played for Mike D'Antoni. Actually, that was like 12 years ago. You know, at this point in his career, he doesn't have the speed to really be a ball handler anymore. Saying his primary thing would be as a small ball four. So that's when the Utah found the most success for him. And when he started saying that, the other thing he pointed out was that he can still create his own shot. So a small ball four that can create his own shot. And then, you know, I went to the Clutch Fans forums, and a comparison I saw thrown out a lot that made me think was, is this a poor man's Carmelo Anthony? Because we know that the Rockets went after Carmelo last summer. Now, I would say Joe is a better passer than Carmelo, maybe not quite as dynamic at 36 years old in terms of creating his own shot. But when I started thinking about it, can you see some similarities? Because it feels to some degree like maybe this is someone you wanted Carmelo over Ryan because he could shoot the ball, but he could also create his own shot in a tough half-court situation. Does Joe Johnson not bring you some of the same things in terms of potential upgrade over Ryan Anderson, the same types of things you were looking at when you went after Carmelo?
You know, he definitely does. And it's funny you mentioned that, because after the last game, Nikola Jokic talked about how good the Rockets were, and he highlighted a few things that really made them deadly. And one of them was they have good one-on-one players. Another one was that they have guys who can shoot threes and they're efficient at making them. I think Joe Johnson adds in both of those categories. Right now people are looking at his numbers in the 20% range from three-point line. That's, you know, as you highlighted, that's not exactly the case. He's a better shooter than that. I think he's career 36-37%. He's going to fit in nicely there, and you always want guys who can create their own shot. I mean, as long as they're going to fit into the system, and Joe will, you want guys who can, if things start to break down in a possession, you can turn to and get a bucket. And he was fantastic last year for the Jazz in that first round series with the Clippers. I think he's a great addition. For a guy picking up for essentially nothing, fantastic.
So it sounds like you're thinking the two guys that might be most vulnerable, you know, if he steals minutes, sounds like we agree he's probably going to be a small ball four in today's NBA. So maybe Ryan Anderson, lesser extent PJ Tucker, are those the guys that he might could steal minutes from?
Yeah, possibly Gerald Green, but as you mentioned, I think he's probably going to play more of a four role. I mean, Anderson is the one who comes to mind.
And Gerald's not even consistently in the rotation anyway. You know, it kind of depends on health, too.
Right. And I think as far as when Anderson's not playing, as we saw that recently, out again with that ankle, is, you know, they have Luke and they have Tucker playing that power forward spot. So really, I think they're a little bit thin, even though those guys do a fantastic job when the Rockets are running small. This gives you just more depth at that position. And he's a guy who's flexible. He can play up, you know, anywhere from 4 to 2. So I think, I think that's exactly who's going to probably lose those minutes.
We'll turn to Brandon Wright, the other guy. I know he's a guy that has frustrated you for years, going back to when he was with Dallas, and it seemed like he had a breakout game against the Rockets like every single time those two teams played.
Yeah.
Now 30 years old, it feels like he's been in the league for forever, and to some degree he has. I think he's been in 11 years because he came in he played 1 year at UNC. But if he's healthy, he feels like a guy to me that gives you what D'Antoni always says, the vertical spacing. And, you know, as far as that number three center spot, if there was one problem with Tarik Black, I would say there wasn't enough contrast with Nene. Whereas if you have if you're carrying a third center, what I think you want is someone who theoretically gives you another dimension so you can kind of mix and match. And to me, it feels like a good fit because we all know what Nene can do in the half court, but then Wright gives you a dimension that Nene doesn't. So you can kind of, you know, pick and choose your matchups, who's better on a given day.
Yeah, you know, that role, the five, you know, that rim protector is such an important one for the Rockets. Really, it's almost like the quarterback for the defense. I mean, you've got to know so many different things, and I think Tarik just hasn't quite fit in. He's had some good moments. He has some moments where you see Harden and other guys out there like trying to tell him where to be. I think Brandon Wright, if he can fit in that way, especially in limited minutes, is going to be fantastic. I think he's very efficient offensively. You know, he tells his guards when he's up in Memphis, he says, look, throw the ball up, I'll make you guys look good. Well, that's not going to be a problem. You don't need to do anything to make, you know, Chris Paul and James Harden look good. Those guys are already experts at doing it. So I think they're going to have a great connection as far as, you know, offensively, how well he's going to be defensively, he's a good shot blocker, but how well he's going to be fitting into this scheme, knowing it, that remains to be seen.
Yep. 30 years old, though, so there's still a lot of optimism, I think, for a guy, you know, whereas Joe, obviously you're kind of on borrowed time with him, but Brendan Wright, just 30 years old, at least athletically, he looks the part, so you can see why they wanted him. And as far as the other center buyout candidates, I get asked all the time, you know, what about Brook Lopez? What about Tyson Chandler? As far as the reasons the Rockets didn't go after those guys, I think it's more around the league. There's conversations that are had. I think the Rockets have a good landscape, a good idea of the landscape, who's going to be out there. And they probably think that Brendan Wright's the best fit. If there were other centers that they thought were going to be available later, I'm sure they've placed calls to agents. And flip side, as we said, Joe Johnson, Brendan Wright, they wanted to be here. I'm sure if these other two guys, if they wanted to get to Houston, then they know they have to act quickly. So I think whether it be they don't get bought out, or whether if they do get bought out, they want to go somewhere other than Houston, maybe somebody that gives them more consistent playing time. It just seems to me, I'm pretty confident the Rockets did their due diligence. Oh, wow. They know who was going to be available. And for various reasons, either they weren't going to be available or they weren't going to be fits here.
Yeah,
right?
No question they did that because, why would you jump on buyouts if you like somebody else that could be bought out? They have a good idea who's going to get waived, who's going to be available. I think Brendan Wright is like I said, he's different. He's more like a poor man's Capella. He's got that kind of wingspan. He's got that kind of potential, a good contrast from Nene, whereas you pointed out, Tarik Black is not.
Yeah. Last question, and this is non-buyout related, but we just talked to Mike D'Antoni before the game, found out they're sticking with P.J. Tucker at the four spot, and that's something they started after Ryan Anderson's return from the ankle injury on Friday night against Denver. I know they say, the stated that they don't want to focus on starters, that it's just about going with the flow, but folks, Ryan Anderson only missed one game. It's not like he was out 2 weeks, It's
right,
not
right.
So, to me at least, it feels like that maybe this is something they've been thinking about for a while, and be it the brief injury, maybe it's the fact that Ryan Anderson is playing well now, at least from a shooting perspective, so it's not like a demotion. I don't know. To me, it doesn't quite pass the smell test that it's just kind of, fooling around. It at least seems like something to me that they're highly considering, to the point where it would not surprise me if P.J. Tucker is starting in the playoffs.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think that's a fair assessment. Look what they just did, with those guys starting against Denver. They killed Denver, and Denver has been playing really well. Their defense has been sharper. I think, they're limiting their turnovers. And Ryan has been struggling, let's be honest. It was like 25 games there where it was really rough. He started to come around. Let's see if he might, embrace this role coming in off the bench with Eric Gordon. I think that he might do well there. But certainly, I agree with you. There's something they had to have been thinking about for a while. This isn't just because bringing him along because of an injury.
Yeah, and the other thing to consider, Ryan, when he was in New Orleans, that's when the Pelicans had a playoff team, they brought him off the bench then. And maybe you bring him off the bench, it's a way to kind of mitigate his defensive limitations because you're not putting him up against, the best power forward in the West. You're putting him up against the backups. So maybe that's a way you can actually hide him a little bit as well. Last year they were desperate to have somebody fill those minutes. Now you've got alternatives. Maybe you can use him optimally and kind of not make him the defensive liability quite to the extent that he's been. Anyway, Dave, thanks so much for the time. Folks, if you're not already following Dave out already, he is on Twitter at ClutchFans. He's also on Facebook at facebook.com/ClutchFans, and the website is clutchfans.net. For me, I am Ben DuBose. You can follow me on Twitter at Ben DuBose or the show at Locked On Rockets. You can also find us on Facebook at facebook.com/LockedOnRockets, and the website is LockedOnRockets.com. Folks, that will put a bow on today's show. Thanks to Dave for joining us, and we'll be talking again tomorrow, I would assume, right here on Locked On Rockets, your home for daily commentary on Houston Rockets basketball.